Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. For the fourth time this month, there was another tense meeting in Cambridge yesterday over the fatal police shooting of 20-year-old Saeed Faisal. Police have said Faisal appeared to be experiencing a mental health crisis and jumped from an apartment window with a knife and was cutting himself. They say they chased him for about five blocks, but he wouldn't drop the knife. After a less-than-lethal weapon still did not disarm Faisal, police shot and killed him. Cambridge officials say the incident is under investigation, but residents have been protesting and demanding more information, including the names of the officers involved and why the officer who shot has been placed on administrative leave. In an attempt to reduce tensions, at yesterday's special city council meeting, the councilors met virtually to discuss the shooting and police policies. Cambridge Mayor Sumbul Siddiqui said she's wrestling with questions about how to make improvements.
We have these policies, procedures, protocols. A 20-year-old man is dead, young man is dead. And thinking through what these policies are, they're being used. And where does the accountability lie?
We want to talk about that question and others surrounding police use of force in Massachusetts. How should authorities respond when a person is in crisis? How should police balance the safety of the person in the emergency with the safety of a community? Are police equipped to handle these emergencies? And are they being asked to respond to larger societal problems? Donna Mosh is president of the Massachusetts Association for Mental Health, and she's with us to talk about this. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Deborah.
Also with us in studio, Newton Police Chief John Carmichael. Chief Carmichael, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So we want to let you know, listeners, that we will be talking about violence and mental health issues, and some of you might find that upsetting. So that warning before we begin. So, Donna, let's start with you. The statistics that I've read are pretty grim. About a quarter of police shootings involve someone having a mental health crisis. Is that right?
Actually, in a 2016 Globe article, the citation was that half of all police shootings in Massachusetts involved someone being killed were of people with a mental health condition. There are national statistics that indicate that people that have these conditions or who call police in crisis are 16 times more likely than the general public to be killed by police.
And you know, we've been talking about this for years, and of course it's come up very recently in Cambridge in these several community meetings and city council meetings about the shooting in Cambridge earlier this month. And Cambridge police say they have been well-trained to respond to crises. And I want to play a piece of tape here from one of those meetings. Cambridge Police Commissioner Christine Elo told city councilors that police were operating from the perspective that they had to protect the safety of the community when they responded to Faisal on January 4th. Let's listen to that tape.
So it was not an option for us to leave that scene or to not pursue him as he's running through Cambridgeport with this large knife.
Don, I wonder, in a situation involving someone in crisis who has a weapon and is experiencing a mental health emergency, what do you think should be done?
Well, there are a variety of steps that can be taken. And I don't want to say that Cambridge, along with 115 other cities and towns in the Commonwealth, out of a total of 351 cities and towns, now have grants from the Commonwealth for diversion, for crisis intervention training, and for hiring clinicians to work closely with police, known as co-responders. That said, a number of other departments have taken it upon themselves to make investments to train police in crisis intervention. In a very high-stress, high-stakes crisis like the one that occurred in Cambridge, involving what police would define as a lethal weapon, the CIT training is not deep on that. And some have suggested that there are other kinds of trainings that would be very complementary to crisis intervention training, such as integrating communications assessment and tactics training, known as ICAT or ICAT training, which is a training for first responders who may be put in a position of needing to use force. And there are other trainings that have been conducted to help people through not just the 10% to 20% as some of our police departments and 911 or NPSAPs have reported, the number, those numbers of calls that involve a possible mental health crisis or a mental health issue. But for the those where there, again, is a crisis that involves someone, for whatever reason, trying to defend themselves or otherwise with a weapon. And I think it's difficult. It's a situation that responding in a situation like that relies heavily on what one's training is, what experience someone has had with a situation like that, and their judgment, their whatever innate knowledge and skills they have. So if you haven't been trained in de-escalation or the way, for instance, a team that gets sent out in the case of a hostage crisis or whatever has had extensive training. If you haven't had that kind of training and experience, fortunately, these are not incidents that are happening every day. Many officers may not have had this experience. It's difficult in the moment not to rely on other training you may have had. And with police trained that, you know, if someone has a sharp object and they're within 21 feet of that individual with that sharp object being presented in, you know, what's perceived to be a threatening way, police are trained to a different kind of response in that moment than de-escalation. And so it's, I think we have to think more about that, but also the public health and behavioral system needs to not only step up more what they can offer in partnership to the police and public safety programs, but be able themselves to participate in the kind of in-depth training that make people feel comfortable and also able to protect them if they incorporate them in a team like that. We have co-responders now that many of the police departments use, but officers sometimes out of concern for the safety of the co-responder will leave the co-responder outside of that kind of a crisis mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. So we have to think through how we could make it possible to integrate all those capabilities in a response.
Okay, I want to bring Chief Carmichael in here. Let's talk about some of those things. First off, the bigger picture of balancing public safety needs when police respond to something like this, and if police are trained to deal with a threatening situation in one way, then how do you balance that with also trying to de-escalate a potentially volatile situation?
Yeah, so the quick question is yes, all Massachusetts police officers are trained in how to deal with mental health crisis and how to de-escalate situations. But so far, the conversation that we've had so far today has been about the outcome and some very tragic situations. There's many situations, hundreds and hundreds, that result in very positive outcomes. And what we're doing here is we're putting the outcome on the police officer on the street who is patrolling our neighborhoods and keeping the community safe. And we're putting this burden on them, where we should really be looking at the entire failure of the system, the mental health system in and of itself, the healthcare system, because that's where these situations are brought up. And there many times what you will see is there are many opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to intervene through the mental health system. And many times that's not happening. We will section people. We take them to the hospital. They're
involuntarily.
Yeah, they're regulated and they're sent back out. And basically what the police are doing, we're going to these calls over and over and over again for the same thing. And with no real remedy for it. What's very important to note is that what we need to do is have this system where we are not working in silos. The police cannot deal with mental illness on our own. It has to be an independent response with DMH and organizations like Riverside, our hospitals, our mental health clinicians, and that's why we've created community crisis intervention teams. So these stakeholders are all at the table talking about these matters and talking about case studies and how we deal with these situations differently and better. You can't just talk about the police officer at the end of some tragic situation that happens and put the blame on the cop. I heard the word accountability. Accountability is all of us, that we all own that, not just the officer in the street. We're putting a tremendous burden on them. And what I often hear is that, you know, the officers are, they're not well-equipped, they're not well-trained. There's nothing further from the truth. Officers in Massachusetts, through the Municipal Police Training Committee, have been trained on crisis intervention training for years. Dynamics of addiction, Alzheimer's and dealing with dementia patients, dealing with people with disabilities, interactions with people with mental illness. We have crisis intervention training here in Massachusetts, 40-hour classes that are the Memphis model, which is very important, mental health first aid, all officers are trained in. We have many departments have joined the One Mind campaign through IACP, which also, in addition to those training, also has partnerships with members like the Community Crisis Intervention Team, and policies that are written to address these situations. I heard ICAT was mentioned. Many police officers of Massachusetts are trained in ICAT training, ABLE training, active bystander law enforcement. We are very well trained in dealing with mental health calls.
So the question is then, and I understand. I'm not saying that you know, police are the only ones responsible for the failures in our mental health system, and we know that it is a very flawed system. But the police officers are the ones who use the guns in this case, and we want to talk about that. And you know, there was a recent lawsuit filed over a 2021 shooting in Cambridge. It had some similarities, in Newton rather. It had some similarities to the Cambridge shooting, where a man who was apparently in a mental health crisis had a knife, and police were called, and they used a less than lethal weapon, and then ended up shooting and killing 28-year-old Michael Conlin here. And yes, officers apparently were trained in the department, but what can help avoid these kinds of things, Chief?
Well, what can avoid them is to have a mental health system that's not letting people fall through the cracks in the first place. You know, years ago, we had institutions here all over Massachusetts that where people were treated and helped with mental illness. You know, we changed that model. We moved the model into more community-based, you know, living in a neighborhood, living by themselves, which is great. The problem is if, you know, we also still live in a free society. So if somebody's dysregulated or they're in some type of a mental health crisis, who's going to deal with that? It's not, you know, it's not their primary mental health, you know, doctor or whatever. It's the police. The police end up dealing with it. And that's why we have integrated a co-response model with a clinician to help us with those things. But when somebody picks up a knife, that narrative changes. That can ultimately turn into a deadly force situation, which we've seen many times happen here in Massachusetts and across the whole country. The fact that somebody has a mental health issue doesn't negate the fact that somebody has a knife and they could harm themselves, they could harm the public, they could harm the police officer. And so when that decision is made, you know, to charge a police officer with a knife or another person, that the officer has an obligation to act on that, using the appropriate force necessary. And many times, you know, what we do is we second guess what the officer does. These are very dynamic situations, unfolding circumstances. These are situations where the officers are forced to make very split second decisions in a time of stress. And we put that burden on them. And so when they act, we're supposed to support them and have these conversations like we're having, and sometimes tough conversations, which are very important. But we don't look at it in retrospect and say, you know, this is what the cop on the street did wrong over and over again. We look at, you know, was it reasonable? Was it based on the totality of the circumstances? You know, and not in hindsight. These are the standards that we're supposed to abide by. Mm. And even when we do that, there's a lot of criticism that can come with that. We expect it. We expect scrutiny. You know, but what do we expect the police officer to do out there? There's role confusion here. What does the community, what does our community members expect us to do in these situations when someone has a knife and they've become a threat to others?
I want to talk about alternative responses, right? Mm-hmm. There are alternative response teams, and there has been a lot of talk in Cambridge about this program known as HEART, the Holistic Emergency Alternative Response Team, and we spoke with one of the board members for HEART, Stephanie Grand, and she said since the shooting in Cambridge on January 4th of Mr. Faisal, calls to that group have tripled. The group began operating last fall, and it's a resident-led group to respond to mental health crises. But, you know, she said something interesting. She also told us that even if Cambridge HEART had been fully scaled up earlier this month at the time of the shooting, it would not have been able to respond to that call. And let's listen to why.
The city advocates for police responses to all crises that involve a weapon. There's no nuance in the distinctions between different types of weapons.
So her argument, Cambridge HEART's argument here, is that if it's a weapon that does not require ammunition, then perhaps trained mental health professionals should respond to calls like that. I want to get Donna to weigh in just a minute. But Chief, I'm wondering, what do you think of that? Should a resident-led group of folks?
That's unrealistic. You do not put a civilian person into a crisis situation with somebody that's armed, whether it's a firearm, a knife, a baseball bat, whatever it is. We don't do that. I would never put my clinician into a situation like that. Police officers, when somebody is contained, police officers, we have different LECs, law enforcement commands in Massachusetts, that respond and have trained crisis negotiators that can come out and help. And many those are usually called very early on in these crisis situations. But, you know, as far as a co-response model or help with things like that, law enforcement certainly welcomes that. We want as much help as we can get. Mm-hmm. So,
Donna Mosh, what do you think of these alternative responses, and how are they most effective?
I completely agree with the chief in as he talks about the many cases where clinicians are in partnership with the police going out and being effective at managing a crisis situation. I would also say that our system has been for many, many years, decades, backing off of being on the front lines in urgent crisis situations in favor of police. And in the last few years, people have taken stock of that and realized that we have to make much greater commitment and investment to assuming an appropriate role and to be timely and well-trained to respond in a crisis and to be partners with police and public safety. And investments have been made, important investments now, in creating community behavioral health centers, where, by the way, it's a requirement of their operations that they have a partnership with their local police departments and public safety programs. Now, those went live in early January. Mm-hmm. And the chief mentioned working with Riverside, who is the designated agency there. There also are increasing but need to be a lot more investments to support the work police are doing in training. We have to train clinicians to be strong and capable partners for police
I'm sorry that we've got just about a minute and a half left here, so I want to ask both of you this question. If there was one thing, and you have to be really brief here, if there was one thing that you think would really make a difference in preventing tragedies like this, what would it be? Chief Carmichael.
It would be the full collaboration of all of the stakeholders involved, and we're doing that right now. It's a work in progress, but we're doing it, working with DMH, working with organizations like Riverside, our local hospitals, police, clinicians, the whole mental health care system, and us working together. Again, we can't work in silos. It has to be – we can't be independent.
Okay.
It has to be a group effort.
Donna Mosh, what would you say?
I agree with the chief that the integration is key, but resourcing services like urgent behavioral health care to get upstream of the deteriorated situations that cause these life-threatening and lethal crises is very critical. And again, urgent behavioral health care is now available in the Commonwealth since the 3rd of January in over 60 clinics.
And we'll see how that plays out.
We will. It's a critical, critical step.
All right. Donna Mosh, president of the Massachusetts Association for Mental Health. John Carmichael is police chief in Newton. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.